There's a fairly bad movie from about 1985 that had a great scene in it where John Candy plays an overly energetic, well-meaning Peace Corps volunteer blundering into a remote village in Thailand. He rounds up a bunch of reluctant locals to build a bridge. You'll note my very literal reference to building bridges. John Candy's character, Tom Tuttle from Tacoma, says to one of his Peace Corps colleagues, "I don't understand it. I explained the bridge. Everything was A-okay. Then I mentioned the teak wood we'd be using, and they all went heathen on me." One of the locals comes up and says, "The problem is you're a jerk." Tom, John Candy, all right, let's not get personal. Anyway, who said that? The local fellow says, "You're a jerk, Peace Corps guy. You can't cut down those trees. They're sacred. The spirit that guards the village lives in those trees. Don't they teach you nothing?" Now, I remember that scene because it was funny, but also because it reminds me to be open-minded and respectful when I think it's time to build a bridge. If someone doesn't seem to be cooperating with my bridge-building agenda, maybe I'd better be ready to learn and open my ears, my eyes, my heart before starting to cut down sacred trees. Bridge building, it seems, can take some time. I'll leave it to today's homilist, Shelley Motz, to explore this further with you today in the service. We're going to light our chalice in a moment. I want to mention that I've had the pleasure over the last year or so of starting to build a bridge with today's chalice lighter, Hele Kalas. We've connected here at the church with conversation, shared interests in education, language, and culture. I'm pleased to invite Hele to come forward and light the chalice.
I am going to confess that building bridges is not one of my favorite hymns. It gets stuck in my head whenever we sing it, and its haunting melody and hopeful lyrics ring in my ear long after I leave the sanctuary. One day, as I was hiking with my family after the service, I came across a small wooden bridge over a creek. And I thought about the lyrics to building bridges. And I started to question what we actually mean when we sing about building bridges between divisions. At first glance, the metaphor makes sense. Bridges connect people and places. Bridges span chasms. They help us overcome obstacles and navigate difficult terrain. But, I wondered, is the analogy too simple? And does it go far enough? We talk about building bridges or crossing bridges, but I don't hear us singing about the work required to sustain those bridges. Physical bridges erode. They're worn down by weather and natural occurrences, by use. If we're going to build metaphorical bridges, shouldn't we also think about how we're going to maintain them? Now, when you sing building bridges, you might picture a bridge like that simple wooden bridge in the forest. You might see something less humble, like the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, or Tower Bridge in London. Do any of you see a bridge like this one on the screen? And I know it's hard to see because of the light. I'll describe it. This is a picture of the last remaining Inca rope bridge in Peru. These simple but I think ingenious suspension bridges formed an integral part of the Inca road system. They were built over canyons and gorges and rivers for hundreds of years. One community in Peru maintains this practice. Once a year, everyone in the village gathers to make a fresh bridge. Each person has a special role to play. Some are tasked with gathering the long grass. Others twist the grass into long ropes. These ropes are woven into braids, which are then twisted into long cables as thick as my arm. Once the cables are ready, a group of people string them across the gorge, pulling to ensure tension. Riggers then lash the cables together to create a footbed that they can walk on confidently. Some of these bridges span 60 feet. If we're going to build bridges between divisions, I want them to be well considered. Like the Inca rope bridges or grass bridges, I want them to be built collaboratively. And more than that, I want them to be reimagined and rebuilt as needed. I don't want them to be hastily built and then neglected. I like the story about the Inca rope bridges because I think we can learn three things about building effective bridges. One, we need to understand our roles and responsibilities. Two, we need to develop some essential skills. And three, we need to be committed to doing the work over and over again as long as it is required. I'd like to illustrate these points by sharing the words of Reverend Meg Roberts in a sermon on truth and reconciliation that she delivered to South Fraser Unitarian Congregation in October 2015. She said, quote, "As a non-Aboriginal person, as a Unitarian, what is my role in engaging in the truth, healing, and reconciliation process? First, I need to ground myself in my own Unitarian principles and recognize where I come from culturally, what my personal history is with these issues. Then I need to learn more about the truth of what happened and is happening. Next, I must learn from Aboriginal people what it would take for healing to happen and what reconciliation might look like. I need to take the time to think about these things as well from my own perspective and decide on the next steps I'm going to take." End quote. Later in the same sermon, Reverend Roberts shared an excerpt from a statement that was prepared by Indigenous elders from various nations in partnership with Jewish, Sikh, Chinese, and Japanese Canadians. The statement was delivered before the Reconciliation Walk in Vancouver in 2015. And all those who prepared it were part of groups who had received official apologies from the Government of Canada. They wrote, quote, "As Canadians, we share a responsibility to look after each other and acknowledge the pain and suffering that our diverse societies have endured, a pain that has been handed down to the next generations. We need to right those wrongs, heal together, and create a new future that honors the unique gifts of our children and grandchildren. How do we do this? Through sharing our personal stories, legends, and traditional teachings, we found that we are interconnected through the same mind and spirit. Our traditional teachings speak to acts such as holding one another up, walking together, balance, healing, and unity. Our stories show how these teachings can heal our pain and restore dignity. We discovered that in all of our cultural traditions, there are teachings about reconciliation, forgiveness, unity, healing, and balance." End quote. Reconciliation, forgiveness, truth-telling, listening. These are some of our responsibilities, but they aren't quick wins. And despite good intentions, our attempts to bridge interpersonal differences, as Morgan demonstrated through his sharing of the John Candy movie, our attempts to bridge interpersonal differences can be clumsy and even hurtful. Researchers at the Greater Good Science Center study the psychology, sociology, and neuroscience of well-being and teach skills to foster a thriving, resilient, and compassionate society. Its Bridging Differences initiative provides people with evidence-based strategies to improve dialogue, understanding, and relationships across political and social divides. It offers the following 5 tips for improving conversations across differences. 1, listen to another story. 2, don't take anything personally. And by this we mean, if somebody challenges you, be curious, not defensive. 3, be a bridge, not a barrier. Be aware of how your words and actions can obstruct the conversation. 4, lean into discomfort. And 5, set norms to create a safe and brave container. Agree to the terms by which you will communicate and treat each other. In addition to these 5 tips, the center, the Greater Good Science Center, recommends some exercises that can help us build empathy, practice moral reframing, and cultivate mindfulness, all of which have been shown to help build bridges. I'm going to take a moment to very quickly work through an exercise designed to encourage generosity by finding commonalities between people. Are you ready? All right. Think of a person in your life who seems to be very different from you in every way you can imagine. They might have different interests, different religious or political beliefs, or different life experiences. They may even be someone with whom you have had a personal conflict, or who belongs to a group that has been in conflict with a group to which you belong. So just take a moment to think of one person. All right, 2. Make a list of all the things that you most likely share in common with this person. Perhaps you work for the same company or go to the same school or church. Maybe you both have children or a significant other. You've probably both had your heart broken at some point or lost a loved one. At the broadest level, you both belong to the human species, which means you share 99.9% of your DNA. So just think of a few things that you probably share in common. Now review this list of commonalities. How do they make you see this person in a new light? Instead of simply seeing this person as someone unfamiliar to you or as a member of a different group, try to see them as an individual, one whose tastes and experiences might overlap with yours in certain ways. Now, ideally, we would have a lot more time for reflection when doing this exercise than today's service allows. But I hope that you'll repeat this exercise on your own when you have a bit more time, when you meet someone who initially seems different from you, with whom you have a conflict, or who makes you feel uncomfortable. I'll post a link to the exercise on the Greater Good Science Center on our Facebook page later today. According to research on the Greater Good Science Center website, one of the greatest barriers to altruism is that of group difference. We feel much less motivated to help someone if they don't seem to belong to our group. and we may even feel hostile toward members of a different group. But studies have consistently found that who we see as part of our in-group can be malleable. And that's why a key to promoting altruism, which involves acting to promote someone else's welfare, even at risk or cost to oneself, is recognizing commonalities with someone else, even if those similarities aren't immediately apparent. I'm going to take a bit of a turn here and talk about one of the highest grossing romantic comedies of all time, which demonstrates this concept, the superordinate concept, well. In My Big Fat Greek Wedding, Tula, an Orthodox Greek woman, marries a man who is not Greek. Her conservative father eventually comes to terms with the union by focusing on what unites the two families. In his wedding speech, he notes that the root of the word Miller is Greek for apple, and the name Portokalis comes from the Greek word for orange. So he concludes, okay, here tonight we have apple and orange. We are all different, but in the end, we're all fruit. We are all fruit. We share 99.9% of our DNA. We're all here today in this sanctuary. What else do we have in common? Let's seek our shared goals and keep building and maintaining bridges between our differences with all of our voices and all of our visions. Friends, we could make such sweet harmony. I'd like to invite you to join me in singing our final hymn, but I can't remember what it is. Sorry about that. All right, it is in the Grace Songbook, number 6, just as long as I have breath.